Hello and welcome to another special episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives, where we are reporting today hot off the press about the SELECT study. I am Diana Isaacs, by the way, and I'm with my wonderful co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we are very excited about the SELECT study. So in case you don't know, that is semaglutide for weight loss, the cardiovascular outcomes. And this is really big news because until now, we haven't had any cardiovascular outcome data specific to people with overweight and obesity. We heard the top line results like a few months ago. So we kind of knew what to expect. So we knew we had heard that there was a 20% cardiovascular risk reduction, which is true, but now we have the full article published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So, Natalie, I'll turn it to you for what you want to highlight about the study.
So let's first talk about the number of people. They enrolled more than 17,000 people in this trial. So a very large scale trial, which is what we like when we're looking for, you know, for overall global data and global outcomes. BMI, 45 years old. These people had to be 45 years old with a BMI greater than 27, and they needed to already have a cardiovascular event. So I think that's where we start with this. And then they wanted to see with the addition of, we looked at adding 2.4 milligrams a week of semaglutide or placebo, and they compared those groups to see how many people ended up with a secondary cardiovascular event or didn't. And that's really how the trial was designed, basic as you can be. The trial lasted almost 3 years. That's how long, 34 months, plus or minus 13 months. And the cardiovascular risk reduction was significant. It was 20% risk reduction. And, you know, we've always known that with overweight and obesity, there is a higher risk of, you know, cardiovascular issues and challenges. What would we say to those people? We'd say, control your blood pressure, control your lipids, try to lose weight. But there wasn't any data saying, wow, there is a medication that really can help you with weight loss and reduction of cardiovascular risk.
Yeah, I think it's important to highlight. So they looked at 3-point MACE, which is what the same cardiovascular outcomes that our type 2 diabetes trials look at, which includes basically non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke, and cardiovascular death. And it was an event-driven trial to showcase, you know, when a certain number of events were, you know, materialized. And so in total, the primary cardiovascular endpoint occurred in 6.5% in the semaglutide group and in 8% in the placebo group. And to your point, that was statistically significant, and that was a 20% risk reduction. And I think what's especially so important here is that this is really like the first time we've had this really hard, important cardiovascular outcome data with a weight management drug. And so I think we're all hoping that this will really influence coverage for these medications, because now it's not just weight loss and it's not just kind of these surrogate outcomes like, oh, there was a reduction in blood pressure and cholesterol and weight, so probably you'll have a reduction in cardiovascular outcomes. Now we know, we can say definitively that there was a reduction. It was quite a big one. I mean, 20% is quite a significant, I would say clinically significant reduction, in addition to being a statistically significant reduction.
I absolutely agree. And I think we need to look at what this means. One of the things in the article that I loved was half of the world will have overweight or obesity by 2035. Half of the planet. So when we look at this as a need to help people with that have overweight or obesity, that we being able to say to an insurance company, this is just not going to get someone to a smaller dress size so that they can go to a wedding. This is not just about, you know, feeling better in your own body. This is also reducing cardiovascular risk. I'm hoping that we're going to end up with better insurance coverage for these medications, because so many plans that we work with don't cover weight loss medications at all. Not one kind, not even just a once weekly GLP-1, but they cover no weight loss medications at all.
So one other thing that I think was really interesting is that 2/3 of the people actually had prediabetes in this trial. And so that's fascinating. Of course, we know that people with overweight and obesity have an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And in this trial, they did not include people with diabetes. It was designed for people that didn't, but 2/3 had prediabetes. And so I think one can hypothesize that you, by causing all this weight loss and everything, that it also can perhaps delay the progression to type 2 diabetes. And in fact, one of the outcomes they showed was that 3.5% of the semaglutide group had A1C 6.5 or greater at the end of the trial, compared to 12% of placebo. And this wasn't really designed for necessarily statistical significance, but we can see a trend that there was a greater rate of the development of type 2 diabetes in the placebo group. So that's kind of another really interesting outcome.
And we need to think about that. What that's doing is saying we're delaying that onset. Is it going to be forever? Are these people going to eventually, age is a lot to do with diabetes diagnosis, isn't it? So these people were, younger. So are they going to still develop it? But if we've delayed it by how many, is it weeks, months, years? That's all the things we're going to learn as we use this medication more and more. And again, it goes back to better coverage because it's reducing cardiovascular risk. And they have proof of that now, added to now let's follow these people longer. And we've delayed the onset of type 2 diabetes. That really is a game changer. This is really a change in the way we look at weight loss medication, semaglutide.
For sure. I do think it's important to note, in thinking about, what will be the indications for this? Like, how will it expand? The fact that it did include people that had all established cardiovascular disease. And I think, that was done intentionally, because if you include people that are high risk but don't have established cardiovascular disease, you generally need a much longer trial to showcase these cardiovascular events. And already the sample size of this trial was very large. I'm sure this was a really big undertaking to do this trial. So it makes sense to me why they chose people with established cardiovascular disease. And I think in our heads, we're all thinking, well, wouldn't someone with high cardiovascular risk probably also benefit? But unfortunately, we can't make that claim without having the study and having the data. And so just in thinking about how will payers look at this, I could see that they might initially provide coverage for those with established cardiovascular disease. I certainly hope in the future they would expand that. I could see that having prediabetes, just showing the benefits here, seems like that would really push toward, that would be a great group, having prediabetes and having established cardiovascular disease.
Absolutely. And I think that, ultimately what we're hoping for is more companies to cover weight loss medications at all. Lots and lots of people have insurance that there is no option, not just a once weekly no option, but no option whatsoever. They actually, as a policy, don't cover anything. And as we see more data coming out saying it's not just about the weight loss, it's not just about, you needed to lose weight for a wedding or a special occasion or your high school reunion, that this is about reducing cardiovascular risk. And that in and of itself, I think will play a larger role in insurance company approval. I really do.
Definitely. And I just want to talk a little bit more about some of these outcomes, because of course the primary outcome was this composite of the non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke, and the cardiovascular death, which showed that 20% reduction. They did break it down into some other parameters. So for example, they looked at death from cardiovascular causes, which showed a trend toward benefit. It just by itself wasn't statistically significant.
Mm-hmm.
But two of the outcomes that actually were statistically significant were this heart failure composite endpoint. And I think that's interesting because earlier this year, there was also semaglutide was studied for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. And we always, associate SGLT2 inhibitors for heart failure. But as it turns out, likely all the weight loss with semaglutide also benefits people with heart failure as well. So that was great to see. There was an 18% reduction in the heart failure endpoints. And then death from any cause also had a statistically significant outcome where there was a 19% reduction compared to placebo. So I think those are really strong outcomes. And yeah, it's just really exciting to see that.
I think also when we think about heart failure, you know, what now do we start thinking about combining medications to you know, potentiate the action of both? Do we start thinking about, is it just the weight loss or is it the inflammatory response that we believe that, you know, we all believe that these GLP-1s reduce inflammation, right? So if we're taking some of that inflammation out of the heart, is that helping with the heart failure? We really don't know why it happened. But, you know, that combination sounds like a really good, you know, how does this really happen? What does this work? We don't know yet. But at the same time, if someone had heart failure, we, you know, the first thing we do, even in the hospital, we use SGLT2 inhibitors now. We do not use once weekly GLP-1s in the hospital. Well, would this change that? Or would this be added at discharge? Or would we, you know, there's lots to think about in a, where else could we be using these medications and to help reduce these risks?
Definitely. And to your point about the inflammation, they did assess like the C-reactive protein and an inflammatory marker, and there was a reduction with semaglutide versus
absolutely
placebo. So that was great to see as well. And just, you know, less surprising, but reductions in systolic, diastolic blood pressure, different cholesterol parameters. So definitely a lot of very positive metabolic effects. Now we should talk about side effects too. And fortunately, the side effect profile is pretty much what we would expect in terms of the GI side effects being the most prevalent, occurred in 10% of the semaglutide group versus 2% of the placebo group. And interestingly, they looked at some different serious adverse events like cardiac disorders, infections, surgical medical procedures. And there were actually more adverse events in the placebo group compared to the semaglutide group. So I would say that overall, the side effect profile was really favorable. And they also looked at, you know, some of the other things we worry about, like pancreatitis, which actually there was not more, they were pretty even between the groups. If anything, there were actually more cases in the placebo group, but not statistically significant. Acute kidney failure, also similar between groups. And there were slightly more gallbladder related disorders with semaglutide, very slightly, 2.8% versus 2.3%. There were not the malignant neoplasms, those were even. So, you know, worrying about the thyroid warning with it, the medullary thyroid cancer, that was not realized in the trial. So I think just very favorable side effect profile, which should be pretty reassuring when you have a favorable side effect profile and you have this cardiovascular benefit.
And again, the biggest side effects, of course, are that GI, and that really happens with initiation and up titration. So this is about counseling and education for people. 20% of people typically have side effects or complain of side effects. And so what do we do with that? More small, frequent meals, that really helps solve it for a lot of people. Occasionally we do, I know you and I both see this in our clinical practice, where someone gets constipation or diarrhea and they cannot function. They need to come off of the medication and that's the end of it. Sometimes we can go back to the starter dose or take everyone off or take the person off for a couple of weeks. Remember, this is a once a week medication. The half-life is long, it's 7 days. And then say, let's start again. Let's move twice as slowly and just get them on the lowest dose possible. Because now that we know that there's a cardiovascular risk reduction, would I rather them be on a little bit than none at all? And those are all going to be more questions we want to ask clinically as we continue to practice and use these medications more.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Yeah, it's just going to be so interesting, kind of the whole public health implications. I mean, I think it's just been a big time with semaglutide and showing the cardiovascular outcome data. And then, of course, we have the recent FDA approval of tirzepatide for obesity. So it's like, it's going to be so interesting. Like, payers cannot ignore this. This is like the big elephant in the room now. Like, we've got a new drug approved and we've got one that now has shown such favorable cardiovascular outcomes. What are they going to cover? When are they going to cover it? Who are they going to cover it for? Because it's really just can't be ignored. People are going to be asking for it. And we finally have good therapies that, like, the weight loss industry has been so interesting because we've had so many things that have come and gone over the years. And it, I totally get why people are skeptical, because we have had some really unsafe medications that were FDA approved at one time that caused some serious issues and cardiovascular issues with some of them. So I get the skepticism, but this is really, like, this is totally different. We have a new class now that is, it actually improves cardiovascular outcomes. So, and not only that, but has a magnitude of weight loss that we just haven't seen with other medication classes. And so we finally, like, we have these good tools to really counteract the whole obesity epidemic, which is contributing to the type 2 diabetes epidemic. And I want to be able to use these tools, but we'll just have to figure out how to get them paid for, I guess. So with that, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. And we'll see you all next time.
Take care.